Penguin Random House Audio presents Flying at Night by Rebecca L. Brown. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell, Kivligan de Montebello, and Arthur Morey. With an author's note read by Rebecca L. Brown.
Author's note. When my son was in fifth grade, he had a difficult year. He was kind and thoughtful, but didn't make connections with other kids easily. He was smart, but couldn't focus in school or understand body language and nonverbal cues. He was floundering. He was evaluated by a pediatric neuropsychologist, and much as with Fred in Flying at Night, the diagnosis came back as high-functioning autism spectrum disorder. To say that I was shocked would be putting it lightly. As Fred's mother Piper says, I fell into the black hole of his diagnosis. Not only was I sure it was my fault, I was certain I should have caught it sooner. It took me a good deal of time to come to terms with what my son's diagnosis meant for his life. I felt like a horrible mother. Everyone kept telling me that he was still the same kid, but why didn't I feel that way? With time comes a good deal of perspective and knowledge, and when I wrote Flying at Night, I had a great deal more of both. My son was doing well, making his way through life in his own quirky way, happy and successful, pure of heart and amazingly self-aware. He gave me his blessing to talk about his journey because he wanted the world to know what people labeled with autism spectrum disorder could achieve. I knew what I needed to write wasn't a manual on dealing with autism, nor did I want to hold up my family's experience with autism as a shining example of success. What I wished I had during my own darkest days was some reassurance that this multitude of confusing emotions was okay. There is a side to parenting that we don't share on Facebook and Instagram. The gritty, ugly, hard things about loving so deeply and so purely. Flying at Night is an ode to mothers who fight impossible battles for their children every day without blinking, go to sleep and get up and do the same again. We never know the hidden struggles that others are waging unless we bring our own pain and heartache out of the darkness and share it. We share it for one reason, so others know they are not alone. Thank you, dear listener, for opening your heart. Rebecca L. Brown.
Part 1. Autumn. Piper. You would think that a woman named after a plane, the daughter of the briefly famous emergency landing pilot, the Silver Eagle, would feel at home in the sky. At least she'd be comfortable with the idea of flight. Rather, I've spent my entire life close to the ground, not trusting that steel tube to stay aloft so far above land, or maybe not trusting the man flying it. My stubborn reluctance to fly was further evidence to my father of my status as second-rate adventurer and thus second-rate child. This battle over flight raged for my entire childhood. But airplanes never played as prominent a role in my life as they did from the fourth birthday of my son, Fred, until 3 months before his fifth. For those 9 months, I lived and breathed jets, helicopters, and fighter planes. I called my son Orville at his demand. I stocked appliance stores for refrigerator boxes that could stand in for crude, wobbly airplanes. Cardboard boxes that Fred ate in, played in, and slept in when I was simply too worn out to fight him. As you can imagine, my father, Captain Lance the Silver Eagle Whitman, was thrilled with my son's obsession. For those 9 months, I was elevated to the first-class status I had craved my entire life. My father saw me, and more important, he saw my son. He did everything he could to feed Fred's obsession. He sent us links to websites that categorized every aircraft that flew before 1965, and troubling gifts of planes crashing, which I dragged right to the trash. My father bought Fred subscriptions to somewhat obscure magazines with bikini-clad models lazing on the noses of jets, which Fred never batted an eye at. Whenever the Silver Eagle wasn't actively flying, and Fred was awake, he wanted to meet us at the airport, where we could sit by the windows that overlooked the runway, and he could answer Fred's questions about elevation and capacity, while Fred expertly removed each sprinkle from a donut to eat individually. Fred was the apple of my father's eye, and I was lucky enough to bask in the cast-off glow as the person responsible for shepherding Fred to and from my father. And then it was over. The morning Fred woke up and renounced his 7 a.m. viewing of planes and how they fly, I was immediately transported back to my 10-year-old self, the one who had refused to step onto Daddy's plane, knowing she'd pay the price, his silence, for days. Airplanes faded from Fred's mind as quickly as they had rooted themselves there 9 months earlier. He no longer called me Piper, and I became Mommy once again. Fred's miniature metal airplanes lay grounded in their basket in his room for a week before I had the courage to return my father's calls and politely decline his invitation to join him at the airport. "What do you mean he doesn't want to go to the airport? It's been over a week." "I asked him, Dad. He doesn't want to go. He's drawing race cars right now."
"Let me talk to him, Pipe."
I turned to hand Fred the phone, but he met my look with a steely gaze. His feelings were clear. "So, Dad, I don't think Fred's into planes anymore."
"Of course he is. It's not something you just forget about one day."
"I think it is for Fred." Fred was oblivious to my conversation, oblivious to the amount of courage it took for me to let down my father. The Silver Eagle didn't go down without a fight.
"I'll give it a day."
When, after three tries, the answer from Fred was the same, my father gave up. Gave up on me, gave up on Fred, gave up on us. The light that had shone in his eyes when he'd discussed Cessnas with Fred was gone. Fred never showed any sign that he mourned the loss of his grandfather's attention. It was all too obvious to me that I had a much larger stake in our interdependent relationship. The Silver Eagle had been a conduit for information, and when Fred's need for information died, so too did his interest in my father. I cringed to think that maybe they weren't so different after all. Fred moved on to race cars, and we immersed ourselves in the world of Formula One, learning the names of drivers and sponsors as if they were the letters of the alphabet. After his interest in that was worn out, he moved on, oddly, to arachnids, and so did I. We spent hours outside searching for spiders to trap and hold in plastic containers until they died and Fred wept for them. During that time, he requested that I call him Charlotte, which was awkward for me in social situations, but as usual, Fred was oblivious to his own strangeness. After he tired of spiders, it was on to the mechanics and wonders of the human body. His passion for how things worked knew no limits. In the evening, after Fred tossed and turned his way to eventual sleep, I watched videos of the inside of the throat during a hiccup, so the next day I was ready to give an answer to the question that had stumped me earlier. Fred was well-versed in the details of sex education long before most children, and embarrassingly, he educated several members of his kindergarten class. And the questions. There was a relentless surge from his mouth every moment he was awake. Questions in the car that had no answers. "Mom, why is this a car seat?" Questions I couldn't escape. My therapist told me that no one's brain can handle so much stimulation, and I should just inform my son when I'd had enough that I would take a break from listening for 5 minutes and he shouldn't expect an answer. He began directing his questions to whatever inanimate object he happened to see out the window. While the chatter didn't stop, my responsibilities lessened for minutes at a time. My husband, Isaac, preferred to make up answers. His gentle playfulness was mostly well-received, but I grew tired of the silliness and wondered why he felt it was acceptable to tell our son things such as, "The water in the lake only looks blue, Freddy. It's actually more of a persimmon paisley sort of thing." Isaac swung him up into the air, and Fred begged to be let go, then immediately asked to be swung again.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?